Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I have a couple friends in for guests today, Robert and Carla. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lovely spring. Having a good time.
And it's been a while since you guys have been in the studio. Like, we recorded a handful of things in the past, in the early days. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's been a super long time since we recorded, especially since you guys had your own show and you're kind of pros at this.
Yeah.
So welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We're going to talk about working when it's optional. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of different kind of questions that come in or topics related to this where maybe people are curious if folks retire and then they undersaved and they need to go back to work, like it's financially driven. Sometimes people really love their jobs and they want to go back. Maybe they start on the path of early retirement and they realize, hey, this isn't working out like I pictured it in my mind. And then an easy way back, a lot of times people maybe will get an offer from their previous employer and they're like, well, that is a very good deal. I'd be crazy not to take this. And they go back and they take that deal. So we're going to dig into a lot of those different areas. There's a lot to cover and we'll do our best. I will refer back to one of our early episodes where we talked about the sabbatical that you guys took. We'll abbreviate it today, but there's may have been like a 2-hour episode where we really talked about the adventures that you guys went on and all that kind of stuff. But with all that said, we'll hit some background topics to get a lay of the land and then talk about like going back to work and the kind of work you guys are doing. So currently, can you each tell us like the work that you're doing right now? And Robert, you could kick it off.
Yeah. So I'm working full time. I work in energy engineering. I do building improvement projects and help analyze the energy impact of them. And I've been working for the same company since 2005 and kind of a weirdo. I really like it. I love the people. They've treated me really well. The work is interesting. There's always a different kind of challenge to do every day, but it's full time. We've got an office in Boulder down the road. I go there a few days a week, a little bit of travel, a little bit of time in the spreadsheets, a little bit of time working with people, a little bit of time in front of clients. It's just a good mix of fun.
All right. You sell it well. I want to work there. Sounds good.
So I am an attorney and I am working part-time these days. I am in-house with a company that used to be a client of mine when I was a litigator. So I am really enjoying it. I work about 15 hours a week. And yeah, it's been really fun to be on the other side of this. So I've been having fun with this. I've had this job for about a year since I quit my job at Big Law almost seven years ago. I've had a few different jobs in the meantime. They've all been part-time, which I think is really important for me. I've enjoyed that a lot. But yeah, this most recent job is been kind of an interesting experience because I'm very much back in my old world again. Like I actually am the client now for my old law firm, which is kind of a fun dynamic. My old boss, I'm sort of his boss now as the client, right? So that's a little bit, it's definitely a different relationship we have these days. So I've gone back to that old world, but in a much more relaxed and enjoyable way. And that's been kind of a fun perspective on life to take this sort of step backwards, but also kind of a big step forwards at the same time. So yeah, that's my life today.
Okay. And when we met, it was, I think we had just moved to Longmont maybe within the previous 6 months or something like that. We met at an event at HQ, and this was before COVID. So no one washed their hands and we were all coughing on each other. It was a totally different time. But I remember we were chatting. I think you guys were looking in the area and you had finished up maybe a sabbatical or a break of some kind. So can you tell us like the work status back then, 7 years ago when we met, and then back into how you are working now? But yeah, we'll go back to that sabbatical timeframe.
Yeah, so we both quit our jobs in early 2019, and we were fully retired. Well, we were fully unemployed when we met. Yeah, I think we knew that you were going to go back to your old job, and I was sort of like footloose and fancy free. Oh, I'll figure something out. Who knows what I'll end up doing? But yeah, that was our employment status.
Yeah, we'd left our jobs with enough money to feel pretty comfortable. I would say we were kind of like a lean fi back in Dallas. And then we decided to move to Longmont, where housing is a lot more expensive. And when we made the decision that we were going to move here for community, it was easy for me to say, I'm just going to go back to that job I had before that I liked, to kind of close that gap and make sure that we were kind of safely covered financially. But yeah, we had a nice year where we weren't working. It was a great time and really relaxing, tons of travel, a lot of fun, and then figured out what was next.
Yeah. Okay. And so lean fi in Dallas. And of course, I think when people move, it kind of shuffles the deck a little bit and you can make assumptions about how much it will cost, but the specifics, I mean, even the specific neighborhood that you might move into in the same town can dramatically shift like that lean fi. So lean fi, and you were like, okay, you will go back to work, Robert. And then you were like, I'll just chill. And one of the questions I was going to ask, like, back then, when did you or why did you take the sabbatical? And I'll let Carla answer that.
I was losing my mind and my soul and my everything. It was a very tough gig. My old job at a big law firm was very difficult and very stressful. And I tell this joke, but it's literally true. I cried tears of joy when I left. Robert cried tears of sadness when he left. But I was so ready to get out of there. And I'm the one who found Mr. Money Mustache online. I'm the one who was really pushing us to do something just totally different with our lives because I was just not a happy camper back then, which was hard for me because I mean, obviously it's hard, but I am a very naturally happy person. I think my just easy disposition is to be happy. That's where I naturally fall on the spectrum. And so I was just not in that space for many years. And it just felt very unnatural. And I did not like it. It was not my jam.
When Carla pitched the whole FI idea to me, and I was reluctant at first, like many partners are, one of the things that I came up with that I wanted to do was some big long distance hiking, like the Pacific Crest Trail, which was part of the adventures we did in 2019. I think the seasonal nature of that really helped us make a decision as well, right? So instead of just having work every day being its grind and its challenge, it was, okay, we've got to make a decision that in the spring of some year, we're going to go try this new thing and have this adventure and experience. And that sort of created a clock and a kind of an annual cycle to go check in. And is this the year? Is it time? In a way that life often doesn't give you. Mm-hmm.
How long were you on the path for like early retirement / sabbatical?
I think we were, like a lot of folks, we were just natural savers. And so when I found Pete's blog, it was like, oh, well, we're already like hugely close to that point. So I mean, from the day I found Pete's blog to the day we quit was probably 4 years, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay. So pretty quick, but yeah, that is a little bit common. Although you guys are roughly young. It's all relative. Do you want to share your ages?
I don't appreciate those air quotes. I still feel very young, and I think we'll feel young for a long time. I'm 41. Robert's 42. And yeah, we feel great. We've been, other than a couple of minor catastrophes, big injuries, we've been very lucky with our health, and we've bounced back from those random catastrophes pretty well. But yeah, I think I'm just super optimistic about the aging process. I think we're going to age really well. And so I think we're going to feel young for a long time. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting.
Yeah, I used to say that too.
We're not holding the books out, you know, 3 feet away just yet. It's around the corner.
Basically, when you stopped working, you were in your mid-30s.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is pretty, I mean, that's still pretty good. But you guys made good money, you had good jobs and all that stuff. Would you describe yourselves as frugal or pretty economic, low expense kind of folks?
1,000%, yes. Yeah. We are still working on that. We're trying to be a little better about spending on experiences and things that will really make us happy.
Yeah, I think we've improved a lot since we moved here on that. I think we're way more open to choosing the fun rather than thinking really carefully and deliberately about how we're going to spend our money.
Yeah. Do you have any examples? Because you guys laughed a lot when I was like, oh, are you kind of frugal? Like, do you have any examples? Like, the one I give often is I'll get the meat that's discounted because, I mean, I'll cook it that day. It's not, I mean, I don't get stuff that looks weird or the package is open or whatever, but it's like, yeah, I'm going to cook this today. So it's not a big deal.
So we're talking about going to Greece with a couple of our friends in July. And I like, We have hit a very comfortable fine number at this point. And Robert is still kind of grousing about, like, how much is it going to be? And, like, for sure, we're going to set an economy. And I have gotten to the point where I'm like, but what did we do all this for? Like, what? Why are you still acting like that? If it's not going to be some insane trip, you know? We're not going to drop 30 grand on this or, I don't know. I feel like you still need to take some deep breaths and remember we've done all this for a reason.
The funny, most recent example for me is some friends were going camping in August or something like that. Carla just got a campsite reservation and it was like $60 or something.
$66 for two nights at a campground. And Robert was like, God, that's expensive. Why?
Yeah. Who cares about $66? We're in a fortunate position to not have to care about $66. And
yeah,
like, it's going to be a fun time with a bunch of friends. But my initial instinct is still like, I don't know, man. Is that good value? Is there a place we can stay for like $36?
And I don't want to spend too much time because like this could be a whole like episode. But recently, international travel can be more expensive to upgrade the flight. So I get that. I flew to Cincinnati and it wasn't that much more to upgrade to first class. It was like $180 more each way. And it was fucking awesome. I highly recommend it. So it's worth it to take. I mean, maybe it's not for you, but to watch those assholes going back behind the curtain. No, it was really nice and comfortable. And you got to board first and get out. Like a lot of the tiny friction like made the day a little bit better.
Yeah.
So if it was twice as much, I probably wouldn't have done it. But at that price, I was like, that's decent. I'll test it out and see how it goes.
I imagine on this trip, I will face some pressure to do business class between Carla and our friends.
Yeah.
Our last international travel, the return trip, we upgraded to business class with the lie-flat seats and everything. And it was a nice time.
Oh, so you know what...
we do. We've had
I
that.
I know what I'm missing.
We've tasted paradise.
Okay.
We know what we're missing now if we don't do it.
All right. So you knew you were going to go back to work, Robert, and that was fine. Because you missed the job anyway. You took about a year off and you were able to like reset to like a baseline kind of, I don't know, mindset or anything. Was there any mindset shift from not working and just during that time where you're like, all right, we have adventures planned, but there's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of unstructured time that you have to figure out what you're going to do and how you're going to do it.
So while we were hiking and traveling, it didn't feel like there was that much downtime. There was always something new and exciting and engaging to do. The only time where I sort of felt like a little bit of boredom or a little bit of restlessness was we were in Europe for a few months and we were doing some really fast travel. We hadn't taken a vacation for a decade and it was pretty brutal. So we were packing it all in, exploring all kinds of new places, and we hit so many cities in a really short amount of time. It was just a little exhausting. And we're kind of like, oh man, another painting by a Renaissance master. Oh gosh, what another 500-year-old cathedral with beautiful everything. And we're just kind of bored by it. There was a little period of that. But I think part of it was just the enthusiasm. We had already made the decision. We were moving to Longmont. We were going to be starting up something new. And we were eager to get that going. And we didn't have any community with us at that time either, right? It was just the two of us bouncing around Europe. And we were looking forward to being part of a group of people that had shared interests and excitement. Because we had that on the Pacific Crest Trail. There was a lot of that, you know, just connection that you have with different people. I think that's something that was really clear to me was important for being happy.
Yeah, we loved our experience on the PCT with the people. The actual hiking every day, it, like Robert said, there's not much downtime there, right? You're very structured. We actually met this couple on trail. They're from Germany and their trail names were Gazelle and Raccoon. And gazelle, who was female, she was just having the time of her life. She was so in her element. She was just like feeling so strong, loving every second of it. And her husband, Raccoon, was like, this sucks. Like, I quit my job to come do this. And now my job is to get up and hike every day. And I don't like this. It just feels so routinized. And so, you know, I got to hit this many miles every day. And I'm just thinking about my, like, maintaining my gear and hitting my miles. And he was not enjoying it at all. And so they actually ended up quitting and going back home pretty early. But I think that was a pretty good transition for us because we learned, one, that we really need people in our lives. That's super important because the friends that we made on trail were just incredible. We had so much fun getting to know those people, and they're still friends to this day. And also we learned, like, I think it, not so much learned, but we got to experience sort of a ramping down in scheduling, right? So we had something, a clear mission to accomplish every day. And it didn't feel like drudgery to me so much. I mean, sometimes it was physically very hard, but we were having a blast. But I think those were two very important factors. One was a lesson we took away, and one was sort of this is a good way to transition into a more leisurely life. So it was a good way to do it, I think.
But when we came back, the plan was for me to work, and there wasn't really a plan for you.
Yeah, I was just sort of going to figure it out. And then I met a guy at an HQ event whose wife I ended up practicing immigration law with for a few years, and that turned out to be really fun. So yeah, I was just open to the possibilities, and one popped up, and I've been really lucky. Like, opportunities have just continued to sort of crop up out of nowhere, and they've all been really fun. So yeah, been fortunate.
In those cases, was it part-time? Have you just been doing part-time?
1,000%, yeah.
Okay.
And it's been really great. I was just so extremely burned out. It was ridiculous. He's not kidding. We really didn't take a vacation for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it was hard. Those were a hard 10 years of our lives. I mean, they've paid off now. It's, in some ways, it's hard to regret it. But we should have done it better and differently, for sure. So no one out there should do that. Don't do that, listeners.
Right. Well, and I was going to say, like, it maybe would have prolonged, like, working, probably just in a minor way, but like from a mental health standpoint, like having breaks makes sense. But
oh yeah,
the big law is not, they're not really encouraging vacations, right?
They were not. Yeah, to be clear, this was not a financial decision that we didn't take a vacation. We were not trying to save money. It was just, I didn't feel like I could. And that's fully on me. Like, yes, the environment was really hard, but lots of people navigate it better than I did and are able to take vacations. So that's totally my fault. But we got free. We broke out. So it all ended up okay in the end. But it was a tough 10 years.
And so, Robert, just to emphasize it, so your time off was mostly travel in Europe. And then you guys drove to Alaska as well, and you did some time on the PCT, right?
Yeah, we were always experiencing something new. There wasn't really any sort of like stable downtime.
Okay. So, do you know if you would get bored without working?
I really don't. I think in 2019, I would have. I think today, I see a much different life, right? Here in Longmont, we're surrounded by people who have a lot more free time than the folks that we were close with in Dallas did. And I see a lot more examples of how people use their time in a way that's engaging and fulfilling. And I don't know anyone who seems particularly bored. I mean, I'm in a weird spot where I'm really happy with work in a way that so few people are. Mm-hmm. It's always felt a little bit weird to risk going away from that for something that may not bring the same level of happiness. But I guess I'm sort of at a point where I've seen enough good examples up close that I think I can imitate what all you other successful people are doing.
I think that's fair. Robert has also taken up a new hobby as of just a few months ago, which we're very excited about. Do you want to tell the good people what your new hobby is?
I do not. I think I've been picking up hobbies for the last few years, right? When we moved here, I didn't ski at all. I do now, right? I go hiking a lot more than I did back when we were in Dallas. A few months ago, I started playing the cello again, like I did back in high school. And I think I've started to find more and more things that are capable of filling up my day in an enriching way. I was in Spain a few years ago. We were on a vacation with some friends and I had an accident. I fell. I broke a bunch of bones. I came back. I did some physical therapy and they had some workout programs for me to do. Before that, I'd never gone to a gym or exercised regularly or anything like that. I did a really good job for a brief while. I think Carla's looking at me judgingly right now.
I would never.
Of taking care of my body and my fitness after that. And I enjoyed it. It was fun. And then some bump in the road happened and I got off track and I haven't gotten back on track. But I picture that as part of my future. And I think there's a lot of things that I could do that would feel really good and be engaging.
Yeah, those are all good hobbies. The cello has been really fun. It's funny, I sometimes tell people that you've picked up the cello and they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That must be awful for you to have to listen to. And I'm the one who sort of pushed for you to do this. I think it's been great for you. And I love even the screeching. I love the screeching when you're on those side notes. It just makes me happy to see you engaged in something and know that you love it. Because I have played the piano for a long time and I get so much enjoyment out of that. And so now we've learned two duets together so far, and we have plans to do lots more duets in the future. So yeah, I think it's something, one, that we could do together, and two, that is just really exciting to watch you get into it. It's been great.
Yeah, I think I would say a half dozen years ago, my baseline level of things outside of work was so low that I would have gotten bored. But today, you know, we picked up pickleball a few years ago. I started relearning French again. There's all kinds of random things out there that have piqued my interest in a way that I never really made the space for a long time ago. But like, I think I see a pathway to a lot of things that I would like to explore and do stuff with that I don't maybe prioritize as much as I should today, but I could see that being in the future.
And I think you're right. People that end up working a lot, and it sounds like you have a generally okay schedule, so you have time for hobbies, but there's definitely folks where they're working whatever 50 or 60 hours a week or whatever, and then they're in the car commuting, and then they really don't have a ton of time. So they've let those hobbies atrophy, and they're not even, they don't even know what to do. So all they know is to like work a little bit more, and they'll figure it out. But I do feel bad for them since they're like, oh, I don't know what else to do except work because I should check my email again or whatever.
Right.
So, but yeah, there's so many good examples, like you said, there's a big community here. And then, you know, a bunch of people from like Camp Fies and other stuff. So there's people that like travel all the time. They're always on the road. There's some other people that, you know, whatever their routine in their own neighborhood, they're like really into food or cooking, or they're into something else and they can spend a ton of time on that kind of stuff. So, all right. As we're thinking about like work and the productivity identity kind of comes back to the boredom, which I think is okay for people to be bored as long as you don't like mentally spiral out of control and stuff like that. I typically don't, but to your point, you've rediscovered a bunch of hobbies and you're like, oh, they're out there. I don't think I'd get bored. There's more stuff in the day. I don't have time to do all the stuff that I want to do. And I don't work that much at all. I mean, I work like a couple interviews per week, maybe. And then the rest of the time is open. Really no excuses, poor time management on my part. But all that to say, some people, I've heard them say it specifically, like, I'm just a productive person. I have to be productive, which I think kind of it turns toxic if you're like, that's my identity and I can't not be productive. Like, what if you get a fucking cold? Like, you need to just sit down and rest, you know? So do either of you like feel like that is part of your identity as being a productive person in society, again, in air quotes, where like, if you're not working, you're somehow depriving other people of your gifts?
I mean, my gifts are so extensive. I have to share them with the world. It's a good question. I think I've gotten to a point where I do feel a sense of responsibility to do something good for the world, to make some sort of contribution to our local community or through financial donations, or to do something that feels like we're not just taking from the world, but putting something back into it. whether you call that productivity or not, a sort of semantics, but I do feel some sort of obligation to do that. I don't, and it's not so much an obligation. It really is a joy. It's a thing that we're lucky enough to be able to do with extra income and extra time. So I do feel that, but I think I have graduated from feeling like I'm supposed to be grinding and bringing dollars in the door. That feels like I don't feel an obligation to do that anymore.
I don't know that I would ever have described myself as a productive person. I'm surprisingly lazy, I think, for the amount that I like working. I think whatever I decide to do, I really want to do well. Like, whatever it is, I want to put my effort into it and be excited about making progress or doing a good job at it, whether that's attention to detail, mowing the lawn, or something at work, or making dinner, right? If I'm doing it, I want to do it well, but I don't want to do anything. So, like, I don't think I have that, like, productivity gene kind of thing where okay. I feel that as part of my identity. It's more just, if I'm doing something, I'm kind of all in. That's the way that I like to be on stuff. I will say, as we've gone from needing to go back to work to kind of make the numbers work to years of great market returns and good compensation, I feel like my mindset at work has shifted a lot from being just a worried about doing a decent job to, like, I feel empowered to take some chances and gamble a little bit and take positions where it's sort of, if you don't like my version of this, if we can't come to an agreement on how something should be done, well, maybe this isn't the right spot for me. Mm-hmm. I remember I interviewed for some position internally a few years ago, and someone asked, like, well, what would this mean for you if you don't get it? I'm like, well, my vision of my future isn't yours, and that's okay. And maybe we don't need to hang out together anymore.
Yeah.
And it was kind of nice to have that feeling. So I don't know if, like, I think about that relative to productivity. My job these days is a lot less deliverable creation, and it's more like leading a group of people to be successful. And it feels like a little bit of a game. Mm-hmm. I know one of my favorite business philosophers is the great Mary Poppins. She had a song where in every job that must be done, there's an element of fun. You find the fun and, like, snap, the job's a game, right? A spoonful of sugar, everyone. I think that's the way that I live my life on stuff. And so I think I will find that productivity kind of feeling, the gamification of just about anything in whatever I'm doing. And it doesn't need to be a productive kind of thing.
And you mentioned something that we kind of went past, and I wasn't sure where to plug it in, but we could talk about it now. So Lean Fi, you stopped working, a little more expensive in Longmont. You went back to work. At that point, you probably could benefit from a little bit more in the nest egg, a little cash flow, income, whatever. So currently now, can you tell us roughly your sort of spending rate, and we'll put it in terms of, like, your withdrawal rate or expense rate to give people an idea how optional your work actually is.
I think what we actually spend today versus our invested portfolio is like a smidge over 2%. If we add in healthcare costs, it'll creep up closer to 3% probably, with a very conservative estimate on how much we'll spend on healthcare. So yeah, it's pretty optional. Mm-hmm. I play with those FI calculators a lot, and it's hard for me to get it below 100% chance of success. Mm. So yeah, it's a very good feeling. We're incredibly lucky. And part of that luck is market returns, like Robert said, and yeah, part of it is life circumstances that we just lucked into. So, yeah, our lives are pretty good. We don't have a lot to complain about.
Yeah, but that extra that we have has helped us, right? We've gone from being purely frugal to opening up a little more. It maybe isn't quite natural.
Right.
We're going to need Kevin Sebesta to teach us how to build a fun bucket and use it.
Never enough Kevin. We need never enough Kevin in our lives.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we've become more generous, right? We donate a lot more. That's something that we really recognized was something we were deficient in previously. And I like that we've never really had money stress in our lives. And I think part of what will make us happy in a future retirement state is really having enough cushion where we don't have to think about it. When there's a market downturn, we won't have to really stress about it the way that people who are closer to the margin might have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Shout out to Rebecca Herbst for helping us to realize we should be donating more. She's awesome and I adore her. Her content is great. But yeah, I think having a big cushion has been a good thing for us. I think you and I are, certainly I am kind of a worrywart, and you are too. It's not just on me, but I think we'll benefit from having an extra cushion in life. I'm not sad about it, especially because he's having so much fun working and I've been having fun working since I left my big law job. So yeah, these are, when we talk about ramping down and maybe quitting someday for good, it's more like, well, those years are just going to pass so pleasantly. We're not in a rush to get there, which is a pretty good feeling.
Mm-hmm. Quick note. Again, you mentioned you play with the calculators all the time and you can't get it under 100% because you're not spending enough, right? Or like you've oversaved,
yeah.
Which is a couple ways to look at it. But I want to emphasize for the listeners out there, not financial advice, but you don't actually want it to be at 100%. That means you save too much. Like, I think the sweet spot, depending on the software, is probably like in the 80s.
Yeah.
Because even if you're in the 90s, like those are like, it's just a small percent chance that you need to adjust.
Right.
And we're all adjusting constantly. We're not just blindly following. So no one try to get 100%. It means you fucked up a little bit.
I listened to your podcast, Doug. I am aware of this fact. But yeah, that's it. But it's hard for me to feel sad about it. Everyone should listen to Doug, but it's hard for me to feel sad about it. But I think that's only true because Robert especially likes his job so much.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you are in any way unhappy with your job, yeah, 100% is dumb.
Yeah. You'd probably be like 40% and then be like, take a year off, like figure some stuff out and like, yeah, you'll be in okay shape. And the other obvious thing, well, obvious now, like we've benefited because we probably oversaved as well, but we had great returns. And basically if someone were to start this and they hit a recession for 2 or 3 years, dramatically different. So like we pulled it off because we got lucky at the time and blah, blah, blah. But like, you also could be unlucky, and part of this is guarding against the downside, and then how you don't want to mess up too bad where you have to go back to a job that you hate. So anyway, yeah, Consult your professionals out there. All right. So let's start talking about some of the specifics of like really opportunity cost. So there's a lot of areas we can go into here. But Robert, we've mentioned it a few times. You like your job. You're getting stuff out of it. You're helping people. If you're installing data centers everywhere. Is that right? You're one of those guys?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. We've got to drink up all the water, right? That's
yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding about that. You're one of the good guys, right? So you're doing work that you enjoy. You like the team. They've treated you well over the years. Everything's great. But when I think about it, you've worked there for 20 years. It's like you probably got a lot out of it, and maybe you can keep learning more and growing as a person by working there. But my assumption is you could probably do something new and better and novel in different areas of your life. So again, we're talking opportunity cost, and I'll just kind of leave it open and not ask a direct question, but what are your thoughts on the things that you're potentially missing out on?
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on, especially here. I mean, heck, there's a group of people that went hiking this morning. I was at the office this morning and, you know, wasn't able to really go fit that in. There's all kinds of small things that are gradually starting to pile up and make me think about it. You know, I had a funny experience the other day. The Masters was on and I saw the opening tee shots that they do with some of the old guys who used to be the greats. And I saw two different experiences between Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus. They're both very old. Gary Player, he's 90. He goes, he hits his ceremonial opening tee shot, and it looks like it's a breeze. It's an easy, smooth swing for him, no big deal. And then when he's done, he does some like karate kick or something where his foot goes up higher than his head. He's 90.
Wow.
The next guy, Jack Nicklaus, is in his like mid-80s, and he hasn't taken care of himself the same way. he leans down after he hits his tee shot, which it's like he barely made contact. And he's like, yeah, that tee is too far. The ground is too far away. I'm just going to leave that there. And what I took from that was a real life example of people who've taken care of themselves and paid attention to their body and their health and their well-being. I'm probably not doing a good enough job of that today. I want that Gary Player kicking my leg above my head. I probably can't do that right now in my early 40s.
Yeah, I was like, I can't do that.
But like, I think about those as the, like, if we want to have this good long life that Carla thinks we're going to have, I probably am missing out on doing the things I need to do to take care of myself. I think about the food we eat. Like, I don't pull my fair share around the house.
That is correct.
As often as I should, or at all, let's be honest. I feel bad about that. I'm excited about getting more involved and I want to be the kind of cook that you are, Doug.
Thanks.
I want to make delicious, exciting food that I'm pleased about and happy to share with my friends and family. I start to think a lot more than I did years ago about some of the opportunity costs, and it's starting to weigh on me a little bit. Yeah, that there are a lot of good things here, and we're definitely not doing the work for the money anymore. I don't know. One thing that we have ahead of us is my company has a sabbatical program, a recharge break is what they call it. And we've been buying into that for a while. And my plan is to do that next year. I'll take 3 months off. And I don't know, I think over that time, we're going to have to evaluate really hard, like whether we want to do something like that more full time, right? Whether 3 months is enough for us to feel like I'm missing out on some other big things in life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My thoughts aren't very coherent here, but I'm starting to think about that a lot more as I'm reaching my early 40s and realizing that my best years, they still feel like they're right here, but like how many of them are there?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Again, it was an open question, so that's perfect. I don't know if I like the idea of like, oh, would you do the job for free? Because now it's optional. So like, would you do your job for free?
I mean, I don't think I would do it for free, but you know, I certainly, look, I've worked for the same company for 20 years. I've left money on the table, right? Like I'm not chasing the dollars. It's more about having a good time, having fun, feeling like I'm doing things that are interesting, feeling like I like to play games. I feel like I'm winning. I've changed a few different roles over the last few years in a way that I never would have before. And I think part of that is just an interest in exploring some new areas and like exploring new challenges, but still within this kind of safe, comfortable framework that I've known and loved for a long time. I really like that about it. Would I do it for free though? No, I don't want to be taken advantage. I think I would feel taken advantage of.
Sure.
In that sense.
That's fair.
So another thing that's curious. So you guys are at a 2%, whatever, but like you're well that's within, safe. If you guys even increase your spending by 50%. You're still in fine shape. But you talked about the sabbatical program. Like, who gives a fuck? Like, how much money is that actually? And like, when you look at it, you're like, you could just throw that away and like, literally, it wouldn't matter, right? Basically. So it's like, when you look at it like that, it's like, okay, like it really has to have merit. And I hear you saying it. It's like, oh, leave a little money. I mean, Elizabeth timed hers so she would get a bonus. And I was like, it's a fine amount. We could take a couple of vacations, but it literally doesn't matter. And in 20 years, it really won't fucking matter at all. Yeah. So it's like, how do you justify that? Which, I mean, you could punt that because people at your company may watch, but that's some of the thoughts that I have where it's like, you're making calculations, which makes sense in sort of like past value, maybe even present value, but when you look at future value, it's like not a good use of your time.
I think of the sabbatical as more of a little bit of a test run. And we had a year-long test run, sure. But again, it was it was almost frenetic, the pace of it. So we want this to be much more casual and slow. And I think it'll be a good way to emotionally ramp down a little bit. And so that's the main value that I think we're going to get out of it. It's not so much that, yeah, you've been paying into it for a few years now and we want to get that benefit. It's that we want to take that slow time to see if it does feel like something we're emotionally ready to do.
I like to think of myself as a good decision maker, but I think in all honesty, I'm a decision delayer. I really like to get as much information as I can. And then I think I'm really good at making a smart decision with the information when I'm at the moment where I have to make a decision. And the challenge here is there is no moment where I have to make a decision. And so it's sort of like, why? Yeah. To your point, like if I step back and look at it, yeah, I agree. Like who cares about any benefit from a sabbatical program? Like we don't need the money. If I wanted to hang it up tomorrow, why not? But I don't know. My sort of reluctance to lean in and to go make decisions without any pressure to do so makes it feel a little unnatural.
Mm-hmm. I'm the same way on that too. Like if I didn't get laid off, I'd still be working there now. Interesting. Well, and Carla, your point was perfect. I forgot you guys haven't really had the pure test with you not working, Robert.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. I think it'll be a good thing and hopefully it'll put those opportunity costs into sharp relief a little bit more. Because I think about the opportunity costs for both of us jointly a lot. And I think, yeah, there's all the obvious things that you mentioned, like fitness and more time with friends and just more leisure activities. But I think a lot about, are we missing our thing? Like there are some sort of people that I really admire. I think about like Julia Childs or even some like political commentators that I really respect and just people who put good things out into the world. And not that we have to put pressure on ourselves to do something like that, but what if we're missing out on some thing that's lurking inside of us that is just anxious to get out and we have something that we could put out into the world, it would feel really good. It would feel like a good accomplishment. So I think that's a big part of the opportunity cost in my mind too, is just more time to think and relax and sort of explore other possibilities. It's kind of fun. Mm-hmm.
Carla, for you, so you're working part-time. Some of these have popped up kind of naturally. You didn't go looking necessarily. So if Robert wasn't working, would you be doing your part-time work? Do you feel like, oh, well, I may as well do some stuff?
I think probably not. But like you said, he really doesn't do much to like keep the household running. That's all completely on me right now. And that's sort of another part-time job in and of itself.
It's not very progressive, Robert. I'm a little disappointed. It's a weird picture we're painting here.
It used to be much, much more balanced at the very least. And maybe you did a little bit more. But yeah, since I've had more time, it's flipped completely on its head from where it used to be. So I'm looking forward to getting that balance back. Yeah, I for sure would quit if Robert quit. I think we would have fun doing lots of things together and yeah, I mean, my job is fun. Maybe if Robert took like, if he took on like all the grocery shopping and cooking and cleaning and life management stuff, maybe I would be like, well, my job is fun. I only do it 15 hours a week. Maybe I'd do it a little longer. But I definitely wouldn't want to do what I do now where he's just footloose and fancy free and I do all of the housework and my part-time job. I wouldn't want to do that.
And the special projects of the house, right? We remodeled the basement last year. That's mostly Carla. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm progressive in that sense. I don't just restrict Carla's support to being in the kitchen. She helps out everywhere.
That's not true. You did a lot in the basement. You did all the floor. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it's so interesting with the opportunity cost aspect. Again, that's the one I always hit on. And you guys are feeling it. Now, from the fitness standpoint, fitness and health, I am curious because I think I grew up just like going to the gym as part of my routine. I did bake that into my identity and it's a thing that I, even if I do a poor workout when I'm traveling or whatever, I still like make the effort and like do the thing for a few minutes. And it's a good mental health wise, it's really important for me. So Robert, you mentioned that you were doing some physical therapy, doing some gym stuff, and then whatever, you got out of the routine or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you have a way to get back on track or like, what's your plan?
I mean, I we remodeled our basement, and part of that was to create a little bit more of a home gym setup for us. Well, Carla uses it, so that's really good.
I sure do.
I told myself I would get up and kind of do that a little bit more regularly, like I did for a while. So far, I haven't. I kind of need some impetus to reignite that.
It's me. I'm the impetus. I make him do things, and I'll get him on track. I know I will. But yeah, you do have a lot less time these days. But
and I'm, like I said, I'm fundamentally kind of lazy.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, you guys have the Bowflex, but you also got into the shake weight program, yeah. Right? Is that you had a couple of shake weights you were using?
Oh, yeah. There's nothing like 80s fitness, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. No, we actually do have a really good setup. We have a rowing machine. We have the Bowflex. He's not kidding. We really do have a Bowflex and an elliptical now. And then we have a set of like free weights. So we've got a really good setup. It's great. I use it a lot.
There's tons of room. Yeah. Like it looks like you could do everything you need to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to get them into the routine and like, hey, let's do this. It'll be fun. Now, I'm not a big group workout person, but I know some people are and they really enjoy it. So have you looked at that, Robert? Are you like, do you enjoy the group aspect?
I've never really tried it, but I certainly, if I did it, I would be into it.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's no doubt.
You like games. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I would want to go and like keep up with my friends or enjoy whatever's going on there. The social nature of it would be fun. I've never really tried it.
Gotcha. And one side note, and I'll ask you similar questions in a second, but it's been a few years, but we hiked together. We were training mm-hmm. for 14ers and stuff. So we did some big hikes. You were like, I don't go to the gym much or whatever. You fucking out-hiked me. Like you were so much faster, like just the whole time. I think I'm a bit of a slow hiker. I'm consistent, but I was just like, fuck, you're so fast.
Yeah. Welcome to my life. It's very annoying.
The one physical athletic-y type thing, athletic-y, that I do well is I walk. Like I don't walk a lot regularly, but I'm naturally above average at walking. Is that the kind of thing to say? I really shouldn't say that because I had a horrible injury while walking, but I don't know. I do love to hike and I'm pretty good at going from like couch to a mountain, right? We did after my big injury that I had walking, we did the Manitou Incline like 6 weeks after that, after I got out of a wheelchair. It's like wheelchair to Manitou was like 6 weeks and wheelchair to Wheeler Peak, the tallest mountain in New Mexico was like 60 days. So I don't know why or how I've been blessed with this ability to not maintain that skill and then just get up and go do stuff. I really appreciate it living near the mountains. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it is super irritating to be married to him and he literally just sits on the couch all the time or in his desk chair all the time. And then he'll go climb a mountain and act like
totally
you're the worst human being that's ever existed because you can't keep up.
Terrible hiking partner.
Terrible hiking partner.
Yeah. And it wasn't just walking. Like we were going up like a very steep, like unmarked trail. Like it was a challenging scramble for, So anyway, you hike pretty fast. All right. And then same sort of question to you around the fitness, because I think you were trying to get some group going or tell us about it.
Yeah. So I was going to Yoga Pod here in Longmont for like a year and then I broke my wrist and yoga was like really off the table for a while. So I kind of fell off the Yoga Pod wagon, but I was doing a lot of classes there and they have these yoga fit classes, which are basically like a HIIT class. And I was really getting into those. They were fun. But then my membership expired and I hadn't been going for a few months at the end of it because my wrist still wasn't quite right. And so a little over a month ago, I rallied a group of people and we're doing a fitness challenge, which is pretty loosey-goosey. Everyone has like their own thing that they're doing. But the basics of it are we're trying to get everyone to walk roughly 10,000 steps a day, do weightlifting workouts 3 times a week and cardio workouts 2x a week. And then everyone can like either modify those or add their own personal goals on top of it. And so I'm trying to do that. And it's been really good. I'm enjoying it a lot. So it's made me a little more consistent. And I am now still doing those same kind of yoga fit classes. I'm just doing them at home with a TV. And I feel like I'm saving a lot of money and I'm enjoying it just as much. And I can do it whenever I want instead of having to like be at a certain place at a certain time. So it's been good. I'm enjoying it.
I don't got time for that.
Well, and that's the thing. If you didn't work, you would have time to get tons of steps. So, and with the group thing and the tracking, like that has helped you do a little bit more, like you're thinking about it.
Yeah. I am someone who needs some kind of accountability. So this has been a good bit of accountability. And yeah, maybe we'll keep it going. We're like framing it as a 6-month challenge, but maybe we'll keep it going after that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. It's been good for me.
Is there anything with the diet aspect of it? Because that's the toughest. Some of my friends, which I think, I don't know if you modeled it after James and Rachel's fitness challenge.
This is the knockoff version. I'm sorry, James and Rachel.
great stuff. They fill up quickly, I believe. But when I was chatting with them, I was just like, I'm pretty good on the fitness side. I should work out a little harder most of the time. But it would end up being like a diet club for me, where it's just like, you can't eat as much or drink, and which I enjoy both a lot. And it's me basically being like immature or stubborn, where I'm like, I know that's what I need to do. I'm still in an okay range, but if I really want to push it, then basically I'm going to be hungry for however long the fucking program is. Like that's the recipe. So just curious if there's a diet aspect.
There's not a diet aspect, certainly not for everyone. However, our friends Kyle and Tizzy decided they wanted to do Dry April as part of this challenge. And I don't drink at all. I was like, well, I'm doing dry 41 years, so I can't really join that challenge. But I wanted to do something. So I decided I was going to do no added sugar April.
Oh.
So I have not had sugar. It's a miracle that I'm here doing this today or doing anything.
Yeah, you have a sunnier disposition than I would have expected at this point.
Thanks for turning it on.
It's been a couple weeks now or most of no sugar, and got a couple more weeks to go. So we'll see if I can do it. Actually, last night, a friend brought me these like really beautiful, like, I don't know, candies from Japan that look so amazing. But thankfully, they're like individually wrapped, and I can just enjoy looking at them for 2 weeks. And I'm going to eat them like a maniac in 2 weeks. So that's my little challenge that I'm doing for myself. I think maybe what I'll do is just like modify and do a different diet challenge every month and see. Just have fun with it. Yeah, nothing too crazy. But then I've been telling people that the no sugar thing is going okay. I'm doing it, but I'm also just eating a lot of tortilla chips whenever I'm craving sugar, which is definitely a lateral move at best. But I'm trying not to do that. So we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. So, and I was going to say, did you observe any changes where you're like, oh, my skin cleared up or I something, but you're just eating a bunch of corn tortilla chips? Is that right?
Pretty much. I mean, it hasn't been that bad. I've been through at least 1.5 bags of tortilla chips. The sad answer though is no. I don't feel like anything positive has come out of not eating sugar. So I think I'm definitely going to add it back in. I will try to be better about not eating dessert every single night. And I'm going to try not to put maple syrup on my oatmeal in the mornings, which is a thing that I mostly have done for my whole life. So I'm going to try to make those two changes stick. But otherwise, I can't. This is not a lifelong change. And I don't feel any better. Everyone talks about like, I feel amazing. The whole world is sunshine and roses without sugar. Nope. And I'm just like, no, those candy that looks really good. I would like to have some. So,
Are you doing any of this kind of?
No, I'm trying to make sure she feels resilient by exposing her to what she's missing out on, letting her see that up close and in person.
He's eating ice cream in front of me, is what that translates to. That's what's going on here.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
That is rough.
Yeah.
I'm a team player.
So, anything else with the health and fitness area?
I guess for me, I recognize, and I'm realizing more and more every day, that I'm probably not doing enough there. And for me to have the long-term life that I want, I need to find a way to fit that in. And it's one of the things that's making me question whether the balance that I have right now is right.
One of our neighbors up the street here, they're about 70 and rough. They're in shape. They're hikers and they're in really good shape for their age. The lady's brother, roughly the same age, also in shape, was hiking and had a small, I don't even know if he tripped a little bit, but like broke his hip. Osteoporosis. Yeah. They never lift, those guys never lifted weights at all. So as a mini wake up call, weightlifting is one of the ways to like get your bones strong. So they were like, oh yeah, the doctors told, I think both of them may have osteoporosis. And they're like, oh shit. Again, they're in shape. They're not overweight at all. And it was totally a blind spot for them. So it seems like it has gotten your attention, but I was like, the dude, we did longs the same year, a 14er. And then he heard that I did it. And then he was like, oh, I'm going to do it again. He was like 68 at the time and he was totally fine going up there. But anyway,
I'm developing the awareness. I just have to deal with the laziness. Lift weights.
I don't even think you have to do that much. Anyway, you know all the shit. Yeah. Just do something. Okay. All right. So in the past, when you took the sabbatical and you quit, you knew that it was time because you were losing your mind, Carla. So this time around, it does sound like you have the sabbatical program at work that will be a test run, but do you have any trigger point to force you to make a decision about continuing to work?
I mean, I think that sabbatical is probably the closest thing. Yeah. I mean, there's no milestone, right? There's no calendar point. There's no recurring check-in that we do to say, are we making the most of this one life that we have? It's a blind spot. Yeah.
I think we're going to get there. We'll take that 3 months. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. We're talking about renting a camper van for a while and going on some fun adventures with that, taking our dog with us. And I think it'll just give us some quiet time to reflect and make a decision about when to pull the trigger. That is my hope. And I'm going to call it an expectation. Yeah. Ooh.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. What, and Robert, you do like project management kind of stuff now, right? Mm-hmm. Is that kind of where it...
To a degree, yeah.
I mean, you could come up with your own exit criteria where you're like, I mean, you just fucking make it up, right? I mean, it's your thing. So,
yeah, I really could make kind of a list of things that, like, if I wanted to accomplish certain things. One thing that I do feel really good about is, from a career milestone point, I think I've accomplished everything from like a growth and acknowledgement of what I'm able to do. Like I don't have like a productivity kind of thing, but I am. I sort of see myself as I know I've worked this place for 20 years, and I want to be seen as good at what I do, and I think I've gotten enough fulfillment that way, right? I think I've been promoted enough or gotten enough accolades over the years. So like, I feel like I've checked that box, if that makes any sense. Yeah. And I could probably make a list of the boxes that I want to check. And most of them probably are already there. I could figure out what that should be. I haven't, too lazy to do that.
One seed I could plant. Well, first an observation, then a seed. The first one, it's cool that you got the recognition. When I worked, I didn't get that kind of recognition. It's merit-based, of course, but I did not get it. And it turns out, I'm sorry to tell you, it didn't get it. It probably won't matter that you did get it. However, I know at one point you got a little involved in some local, I don't want to say politics, but the local... Is politics the right word?
Yeah, I'm on our city's sustainability advisory board.
Okay. And I would suggest, like, you could be a great person to help the Longmont community or even bigger, but not if you're wasting time at work. Right? Like, you would have to open up that space and all that. And then you can get recognition on, like, a bigger scale and, like, whatever, clean up the community, make it better for the kids, or I don't know, whatever thing you were interested in.
Yeah, I think I could have impact that way.
Yeah.
in a more meaningful way than I do today. Yeah,
but you need the bandwidth to.
Yeah, you sure did. You will need that bandwidth. Yeah.
All right, one last question, then I'll let you guys pepper in anything else as a final statement if you want to. But because you've had the additional income and you're spending low, you're just able to save more, it sounds like you're attempting to spend a little bit more and open it up and leave some of the frugal ways where it makes sense. We don't want to waste anything, but just like value-based spending kind of an idea. you have the opportunity to spend more because you actually don't, like, your full salaries, right? Both of you. Have you thought about just like, hey, we're going to try to spend a lot more and just see what happens?
I think we're not going to spend it all, but we have talked about either potentially buying a camper van or doing some stuff to fix up the house. Mm-hmm. Those are two things that I think we could possibly do in the next however long until we quit. But it's hard. The psychology of this is, and I mean, quitting for the rest of your life is a big deal, no matter what the FI calculators tell you. It's a major life decision, and it's not something that we take lightly. So I think we're going to be characteristically circumspect and cautious about it, but it's something that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. We could potentially get there.
But I'll say that those are like one-off, one-time expenses rather than like raising the recurring expense level.
Right.
And I think that's what you're suggesting. And we haven't really talked about how to do that. And maybe the answer is the small things, right? Or maybe it's a big thing. On a flight to Greece, upgrading the level of experience on the plane or the lounge experience at the airport or something.
Yeah.
I think there are lots of small things that we could do better on, for sure. I don't feel... We've never been budgeters. I think we've been able to sort of spend money responsibly and feel like it was enough, but it's a muscle we need to work on if we don't want to just have a pool of money with no idea how to do anything with at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we haven't solved this problem either. I'm more not necessarily a spender, but I'm happier to spend, and Elizabeth is a little bit more cautious, so we haven't quite cracked it. And I don't necessarily mean like raising the baseline. Like, the one-off expenses can be dramatic.
Yeah.
And probably rent the camper van though, because like, you don't want to deal with the other maintenance and insurance, all the other bullshit. Just rent it for a little while and then get rid of it, you know. But yeah, it's pretty tough to like, not necessarily like switch that muscle, but like when you start, I mean, eventually you will start selling stuff and you're like, oh, what? Like, I'm selling a lot of stuff, or maybe you're rebalancing. Like, that was pretty dramatic. And I have been selling for my cash flow contribution for like almost 2 years now, something like, it was small at first, but now I'm just like, it's part of the routine. It's no big deal. But that's another thing. Some people freak out when they're like, oh, now I'm selling stuff. So
yeah,
I think we'll be okay about that. When we moved to Longmont, we weren't working and we bought a house. We found a house that we were excited about. And we did not have the cash reserves to go do that. But we also didn't think anyone would give us a loan back then. So we ended up selling a bunch of our assets to go buy our house. And it didn't feel that scary. I think we'll be okay on that. I mean, it's easy to say now. I'm sure it'll feel a little different when it's... I was also about to start a new job the next day. So, you know, it wasn't that... you know, back at the old job, rather. But yeah, the spending part of it is for sure a challenge. I guess so. We've picked up a few things, right? So I started playing the cello again. I thought nothing about getting cello lessons, right? I wasn't trying to teach myself how to do that. Like, whatever. It's not cheap to go get cello lessons every week. But we didn't blink at all about having to do that and making sure we had the money for it. I'm confident that there will be other things like that that creep into our lives if we have more time that we'll be excited to be able to fund.
Nice.
I think so too. And I think my sort of closing thought on all of this is we've been through a lot of crazy things together. We've been married for over 17 years, which is wild to me. But yeah, it's been a pretty good run. And I think we got an awfully long way to go, and it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. So I have confidence in us individually and as a team that we're going to tackle the challenges that come, whether they're the fun kind of challenges, like, oh my gosh, we have so much money, how are we going to spend it? Or like, things don't go as well as we hope and we have to tighten our belts and figure it out. Like, I think whatever happens, we will do it together and have fun in the process.
All right. I think that covers everything. I don't know what else to ask. Is there anything else that we should put in here?
I don't think so.
No, we should all go watch Mary Poppins again, though.
Spoonful of sugars. That's what I can't have. It's so sad. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. I can do it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me today. And we'll link up so people could check out Pennies and Popcorn on YouTube where it's still available. And hopefully you guys will come back when you're, maybe even before you stop working, because it sounds like it may be a little while. But then we can get an update and see what's going on.
That sounds exciting. Thanks, we'd love it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So you guys had a podcast and you did quite a few episodes. You were at it for maybe over a year or just about a year.
It was right at one calendar year. Yeah.
Okay. And then, yeah, tell us a little bit about the show. People can check it out. But yeah, what was the concept?
Well, can they check it out anymore? I think we finally decided we were going to stop throwing money at it and stop paying for the hosting fees. But it was called Pennies and Popcorn. And
you can still catch all the episodes on YouTube.
Yes, that's true. Okay. You can. That's true. Yeah, it was money lessons, real world money lessons from the fake world of TV and movies.
So one of our 11 fans works with me and we have a new like senior VP person over my group. And he said something to him about Robert's podcast and that guy got really excited about it. And so it's on like, some all hands call in a few weeks, I'm supposed to talk about my podcasting, even though it's a bit dormant. So maybe I'll give a shout out to this experience here today.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And you guys, were you avid podcast listeners before?
Oh, yeah. I'm still a huge podcast fan. I love all things podcast related.
Yeah, but it's totally different trying to make your own content and find a way to come up with something interesting to talk about and a format that works. And it's a lot of work.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah. I did all the work, to be clear. So it was all on me. But we had a lot of fun doing it. It was fun because we are guilty of watching way too many movies and too much TV. So we were like, well, why don't we do something productive with this? And it turned out to be really fun.
Yeah, give ourselves an excuse to watch something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it is a decent amount of work. And then when you have the grind of like the publishing schedule, which I think maybe I was like, it's really important to like be consistent. But like Mark Troutman, I think he was consistent for a little while and then he travels a lot. So right. He's like, you know what? I'm going to make this how it works for me. So he publishes on whatever works for his schedule. And that's fine for him because he's not trying to earn money or not that you guys were trying to do that either, but it can be pretty challenging. Now, the other thing, because I like podcasting a lot and encourage people to do it, but like people are interested. So you did this, what, like 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was still out there and someone's like, oh, you have a podcast and they're super excited. They could go back and listen to whatever 50 some odd episodes and 50 hours of you guys talking.
That's true.
We had enough fun with it. I don't think we're done fully. I think some spark of inspiration will come at some point and we'll decide to pull out the microphones again.
I think so too. I hope so.
Finally, in this area, like one concept that I haven't done because I have two shows going is just the idea of like, I'm interested in this topic and I'm going to do 10 episodes on this topic and you have a little research project, you could put it together. You don't have to cram everything into 1 hour. And then you could invite guests on, you could do whatever you want and just cover like whatever pet project or idea you have. And I think that could be a cool way. I don't know if you, I mean, you could just release them individually. You could put them on the same feed and you're like, next season, we're talking about pizza. Or whatever, the whole time we're just talking about pizza, which is just an excuse to like eat a bunch of pizza.
That sounds great to me. Sign me up for that podcast.
Yeah, can I start that now?
Yeah.
You can, yeah.
Longmont has some of the best pizza. It's like Antonio's, they have Urban Field and
Rosalie's.
Yeah. It's like different kinds. I think there's supposed to be a pizza festival in September or something like that.
That's exciting.
We'll have to look it up. We could be like the official podcast of the pizza, whatever the fuck it's called.
I'm in.
That sounds great. Yeah, we're very spoiled for choice with pizza here in Longmont, and everyone should move to Longmont just for the pizza.